Hello and welcome to Religion in the News. This is Brian LeBlanc for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be featuring articles from the Associated Press, from NPR, from Vox.com, and more. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired, but unless otherwise noted, all articles are read as printed. Don't forget that podcast editions of this and other episodes of Religion in the News are available on our website at ncreadingservice.org. We begin this week on Religion in the News with an article published in the Associated Press on December 13th, and the title of this article is, What's Your Religion? In U.S., a common reply now is, None. This article is by Luis Andres Henao, Kwasi Gyamfi Asiadu, and David Crary of the Associated Press. Natalie Charles, even in her mid-teens, felt unwelcome in her Baptist congregation, with its conservative views on immigration, gender, and sexuality. So she left. "I just don't feel like that gelled with my view of what God is and what God can be," said Charles, an 18-year-old of Haitian descent who identifies as queer and is now a freshman at Princeton University. "It wasn't a very loving or nurturing environment for someone's faith." After leaving her New Jersey church 3 years ago, she identified as atheist, then agnostic, before embracing a spiritual but not religious life. In her dorm, she blends rituals at an altar, chanting Buddhist, Taoist, and Hindu mantras, and paying homage to her ancestors as she meditates and prays. The path taken by Charles places her among the religiously unaffiliated, the fastest-growing group in surveys asking Americans about their religious identity. They describe themselves as atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular. According to a survey released Tuesday by the Pew Research Center, this group, commonly known as the nuns, now constitutes 29% of American adults. That's up from 23% in 2016 and 19% in 2011. If the unaffiliated were a religion, they'd be the largest religious group in the United States, said Elizabeth Drescher, an adjunct professor at Santa Clara University, who wrote a book about the spiritual lives of the nuns. The religiously unaffiliated were once concentrated in urban coastal areas, but now live across the U.S., representing a diversity of ages, ethnicities, and socioeconomic backgrounds, Drescher said. Even in their personal philosophies, America's nuns vary widely, according to a recent poll by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. For example, 30% say they feel some connection to God or a higher power, and 19% say religion has some importance to them, even though they have no religious affiliation. About 12% describe themselves as religious and spiritual, and 28% as spiritual but not religious. More than half describe themselves as neither. Nearly 60% of the nuns say religion was at least somewhat important to their families when they were growing up, according to the AP-NORC poll. It found that 30% of nuns meditate and 26% pray privately at least a few times a month, while smaller numbers consult periodically with a religious or spiritual leader. There are people who actually do practice either in a particular faith tradition that we would recognize or in multiple faith traditions, Drescher said. They're not interested in either membership in those communities formally or in identifying as someone from that religion. Over recent years, the prevalence of the nuns in the U.S. has been roughly comparable to Western Europe, but overall Americans remain more religious, with higher rates of daily prayer and belief in God, as described in the Bible. According to a 2018 Pew survey, about two-thirds of U.S. Christians prayed daily, compared to 6% in Britain and 9% in Germany. The growth of the nuns in the U.S. has come largely at the expense of the Protestant population in the U.S., according to the new Pew survey. It said 40% of U.S. adults are Protestant now, down from 50% a decade ago. Among the former Protestants is Shionda Simmons, 36, of Lakeland, Florida, who began identifying as an atheist in 2013. She grew up as a Baptist and attended church regularly. She says she left mainly because of the church's unequal treatment of women. "Not everyone in her family knows she has forsaken religion, and some who do know struggle to accept it," Simmons said. "There are certain people I can't tell that I am atheist," she said. "It has made me draw away from my family." Similarly, at the beauty store she owns, she feels she must keep her atheism under wraps from clients for fear they'd go elsewhere. Like Simmons, Mandisa Thomas is a black atheist, an identity that can be challenging in the many African-American communities where churches are a powerful force. Thomas sang in a church choir in her childhood, but was not raised Christian. Within the black community, we face ostracism, said Thomas, who lives near Atlanta and founded Black Nonbelievers, a support group, in 2011. There is this idea that somehow you are rejecting your blackness when you reject religion, that atheism is something that white people do. Another advocate for the nuns is Kevin Bowling, who grew up in a military family and served as a Roman Catholic altar boy. In college, he began to question the church's role and grew dismayed about its position on sexuality after he came out as gay. He is now executive director of the Secular Student Alliance, which has more than 200 branches in colleges and schools nationwide. The chapters, he said, serve as havens for secular students or those questioning their faith. I think this generation can be the first generation to be majority non-religious versus majority religious, he said. Being Catholic also was a big part of Ashley Taylor's upbringing. She became an altar server at 9. Now 30, she identifies as religiously unaffiliated. It just means finding meaning and maybe even spirituality without practicing a religion, pulling from whatever makes sense to me or whatever fits with my values, she said. Her faith gave her strength when she had cancer at 11, she said, but she also feels that growing up Catholic negatively affected her emotional and sexual development and delayed her coming out as queer. Eventually, Taylor discovered Sunday Assembly, which provided her with a congregation-like community, but in a secular way, offering activities such as singing, book clubs, and trivia nights. She's now board president at Sunday Assembly Pittsburgh. They're not trying to tell you what's true, said Taylor. There's always a spirit of curiosity and questioning and openness. For some nuns, such as 70-year-old Zane Marston of Shelburne, Massachusetts, their spiritual journey keeps evolving over decades. Growing up near Boston, Marston attended a congregational church with his family. He remembers Bible study, church-sponsored dances, the itchiness of his flannel trousers while attending Sunday services. Through high school and college, he drifted away from Christian beliefs, and in his 30s began a serious, long-lasting journey into spirituality while in rehab to curb his alcoholism. Spirituality is a soul-based journey into the heart, surrendering one's ego will to a higher will, he said. We're looking for our own answers beyond the programming we received growing up. His path has been rough at times, the death of his wife from a fast-moving cancer, financial troubles leading to the loss of his house, but he says his spiritual practice has replaced his anxieties with a gentle joy and a desire to help others. He previously worked as a landscape designer and real estate appraiser, and now runs a school teaching Qigong, a practice that evolved from China, combining slow, relaxed movement with breathing exercises and meditation. As a kid, I used to think of God up on a throne with a white beard passing judgment, but that has totally changed, Marston said. My higher power is the universe. It's always there for me, if I can get out of my ego's way. This article has a footnote at the end. The AP NORC poll of 1,083 adults was conducted October 21st through 25th, using a sample designed to be representative of the U.S. population. The margin of sampling error for all respondents is plus or minus 4 percentage points. The Pew survey was conducted among 3,937 respondents from May 29th to August 25th. Its margin of error for the full sample of respondents is plus or minus 2.1 percentage points. We'll turn next to an article from Vox.com that was published on December 14th. And this article is entitled, Is a New Kind of Religion Forming on the Internet? The subheadline, Algorithms are Surfacing Content that Combines Christian Ideas Like Prosperity Gospel with Some New Age and Non-Western Spirituality, Along with Some Conspiracy Theories. And this article is by Rebecca Jennings of Vox. It just doesn't sit right with me, begins a TikTok by a user named Evelyn Juarez. It's a breakdown of the tragedy at Astroworld, the Travis Scott concert in early November, where 8 people died and more than 300 were injured. But the video isn't about what actually happened there. It's all about the supposed satanic symbolism of the set. They're trying to tell us something, we just keep ignoring all the signs, reads its caption, followed by the hashtags Wake Up, Witchcraft, and Illuminati. Juarez, a 25-year-old in Dallas, is a typical TikToker, albeit a quite popular one, with 1.4 million followers. Many of her videos reveal an interest in true crime and conspiracy theories, the Gabby Petito case, for instance, or Lil Nas X's Devil Shoes, or the theory that multiple world governments are hiding information about Antarctica. One of her videos from November suggests that a survey sent to Texas residents about the use of electricity for critical health care could signify that something is coming and the state government knows it. Her beliefs are reminiscent of many others on the internet, people who speak of bad vibes, demonic spirits, or a cosmic calamity looming just over the horizon, one that the government may be trying to keep secret. Juarez tells me she was raised Christian, although at age 19, she began to have a more personal relationship with God outside of organized religion. Today, she identifies more as spiritual, as an increasing number of young people do, many of them working out their ideas in real time online. They may talk about manifesting their dreams and faceless sex traffickers waiting to install tracking devices on women's parked cars. Some might act almost as prophets or shamans, spreading the good word and guiding prospective believers, while others might just lurk in the comments. They might believe all or only some of these ideas. Part of the draw of internet spirituality is that it's perfectly pick and choosable, but more than anything, they believe in the importance of keeping an open mind to whatever else might be out there. I asked Joseph Russo, a professor of anthropology at Wesleyan University, if this loosely related web of beliefs could ever come together to form into its own kind of religion. I think it already has, he says. Call it the religion of just asking questions, or the religion of doing your own research. It's still in its infancy, and has evolved in an attempt to correct a societal wrong, that the world is a pretty messed up place, and it doesn't seem like the current system of dealing with it is really working. So maybe something else is going on, something just out of reason's reach. The religion of the internet has already culminated in real-world violence, the most obvious examples being the QAnon-related coup on January 6th and the conspiracy theories surrounding life-saving vaccines. Yet its more innocuous effects have been likewise transformative. Consider the widespread mainstreaming of astrology over the past decade, the renewed interest in holistic medicine, or the girl boss optimism of multi-level marketing companies. These are all frameworks of belief that question traditional logic and institutional thought. For instance, that science-backed medicinal practices work better to cure disease than essential oils, that 99% of people who sign up for an MLM end up losing money, or that the idea that your entire personality can be determined by the positioning of the stars at the time of your birth is fundamentally false. These are beliefs that cast oneself as the exception to the normal rules of the universe, that perhaps even if the data says the rates of violent crime have dropped considerably since the 1990s, you personally are in far graver danger than you were the year before. 2020 was the first year on record that the majority of Americans said they did not belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque. From the 1930s to the turn of the 21st century, around 70% of Americans did belong to one. Americans, particularly younger ones, increasingly report that they have no religious preference, or if some have put it, it's the rise of the nuns. But perhaps none doesn't quite tell the whole story. The religion of the internet posits questions like, what's the harm in believing, and why shouldn't I be prepared for the worse? The deeper you go, the harder those questions are to answer. Perhaps it's all because of the Puritans. They were the ones, after all, who consecrated the American legacy of individualism, piety, and hard work at the expense of all else. Or maybe it came out of the recurrent phenomena of Protestant-led Great Awakenings that have peppered U.S. history since before it was a country, social movements that preach the importance of one's personal relationship with God outside of organized rituals and ceremonies. It was the idea that you could perfect yourself, your health, and your circumstances, explains Mary Wren, an economics professor at the University of the West of England, Bristol, who studies neoliberalism and religion. This eventually culminated in the prosperity gospel, known best for its charismatic leaders preaching financial wealth and the widespread practice of manifesting, or the idea that in order to make positive things happen in your life, all you have to do is pretend as though they already are. It's during periods of economic crisis that we really start to see it flourish, says Wren. Because many of the churches where it's preached can be attended virtually, the message travels much further. It's a lot easier to have believers when you don't have to physically be in a church. The portability of the message is what makes people believers in the prosperity gospel, even when they're not necessarily regular churchgoers. The same could be said for the internet, where spiritual trends proliferate much like cultural and political ones. In fact, the latest iteration of New Thought's founding principles is inseparable from the internet. Russo, the anthropology professor, notes that as social media has become the dominant cultural force in our society, ideologies are spreading between people who may have vastly different beliefs and backgrounds, but who show up on each other's feeds and relate in new ways. It's a mishmash of different Christian and non-Western beliefs and aesthetics, but this stuff, good and evil, prosperity, are present in all religious systems worldwide, and always have been, he says. Even our most fervent atheists or agnostics are still interested in morality. It's the same idea, different packaging. These binaries espoused by internet spirituality, good and evil, demonic and angelic, abundance and poverty, are reinforced everywhere in culture and not only in the context of religion. The demonic is one of those very superficial distinctions that really has a lot to do with who's your customer, who are you trying to frighten. It can stand in the kind of generalized force of evil in a very effective way, regardless of what the specifics are, explains Russo. It works on people not necessarily because they've read the Bible, but because they watch Harry Potter, or read Tolkien, or play Dungeons and Dragons. Juarez, the popular TikToker, joined the platform during a particularly difficult period in early 2019. She was forced to drop out of college, then began suffering from depression. After that, her husband was in a bad car accident. "I needed somebody to vent to," she says. Though she was raised in a religious household, her beliefs differ from her parents in that she feels less connected to the ideas taught by the church and more to Jesus himself. "I've noticed a lot of the younger generation looking for God in a different way," she says. "They move away from their religious background and have an actual relationship with God." Juarez's TikTok comments section is proof in itself. People have been like, "Yo, I can relate to this more than what I've been taught." Her approach to spirituality echoes many beliefs common in certain sects of Christianity, that occult practices shouldn't be messed with, for instance. She doesn't engage in manifestation because she says, "Humans don't always know what's good for us. I've dated a bunch of guys that I now know I shouldn't have, but at the time thought they were the man of my dreams." Abby Richards is a 25-year-old disinformation researcher who creates TikToks about how conspiracy theories spread online and who regularly works with scholars to debunk and contextualize harmful myths. She's watched how chaotic current events, the astral world tragedy, COVID-19, the confusing broken job market, have driven louder conversations around spirituality from TikTokers, no matter where they fall on the ideological or political spectrum. There's a collective sense that the world is ending, whether it's climate change, whether it's the rapture, the return of Jesus, wealth inequality, satanic worship, or whether people's vibrations are too low, she says. It's the only nonpartisan issue. When enormous swaths of people feel as though they have no power against evil doing, she argues, they tend to opt into narratives that provide a simple answer as to why the world is so terrifying. With the case of Astroworld, the organizers didn't do their due diligence, and they prioritized profit over the health and safety of humans. And that is a lonelier, grimmer thought to sit with than Travis Scott being a demonic villain. It also lets us off the hook. "I totally empathize with why you would want to believe that you could fix capitalism by just wishing for money," she says. "That's so much easier than trying to implement taxes for the rich." The internet offers endless answers to these kinds of questions, in part due to the way it functions. TikTok, for instance, facilitates a pipeline for viewers that begins the moment they log on, surfacing more and more content related to something they enjoyed in the past. Because of how short TikTok videos are, time is limited to 3 minutes, but they're often much shorter, viewers can consume 100 videos in the same time span as they could watch a single YouTube video. And naturally, the speed at which an idea travels correlates to its simplification. An exciting or provocative idea can draw someone in, but not necessarily keep them around long enough to help them fully understand it. In June, a TikToker named William Knight posted a video of himself staring intensely into the camera. "There is no such thing as a coincidence," he says. "The fact that you're watching this video means that you are energetically aligned with me and this message." The bizarre video, which claimed that simply by stumbling upon the video means that you unconsciously manifested the desire to see it, quickly became the butt of a joke, but Richard says she sees this kind of content go viral all the time. They're using the algorithm as evidence that the universe is working, but it's like, no, that's ByteDance, TikTok's parent company. These creators game the algorithm and call it destiny. That human beings tend to organize our uncertainties within spiritual frameworks is not an inherently bad thing. It's just that spirituality, when stewarded by humans, is subject to human impulses. Its religions need scapegoats in order to make distinctions between what's good and bad, Russo says. This utopian idea of a new techno-internet religion free of hatred won't work without someone eventually saying, "I'm actually in charge of this." These kinds of conflicts emerge just by being with people and having to get along in life. We find ways of resolving, and sometimes they're violent. But in this virtual world, where maybe this church is forming, it's not so easy to know how or when or why things are happening. There's an irony, because people are trying to establish order. This is what you can say, this is what you can't say. But there are so many sub-factions and so many voices in the void. It's easy to point to QAnon, which some have argued is itself its own religion, as the worst-case scenario of internet spirituality. QAnon appeared to be led by a mysterious prophetic figure, dropping vague omens and references to a coming battle of good and evil, before over time becoming increasingly likely that Q, the supposed top-ranking official under President Trump, was actually just the guy running the message board. Despite the fact that none of Q's predictions have come true, it barely matters. The roots of QAnon have already been seeded in American culture and politics. Many believers now use the same fear-stoking online rumor campaigns to cast anti-racism as liberal propaganda or abortion as murder, and will certainly evolve to espouse the next reactionary ideology in the culture war. But just as in mainstream religions, it's impossible to judge a system of belief based on its most extremist or violent adherents. Believing wholeheartedly in illogical or unexplainable things is part of being a person, and not necessarily a bad one. Although it's perfectly reasonable to view the current state of the world and remark that things do not seem to be going in a very positive direction, that total destruction is imminent whether it comes in 5 years or 500, many of us still cling to the arguably illogical hope that good, whatever your idea of it, will prevail. Prominent thinkers like Rebecca Solnit and Fareed Zakaria have advocated for optimism about the climate and American democracy, respectively, often noting that pessimism breeds apathy. That we cannot see all the way to the transformed society we need does not mean it is impossible, writes Solnit, but only if we go actively towards the possibilities rather than passively into the collapse. One of the more unfortunate tragedies of humanity is that we don't know everything, and we never will, and therefore are destined to be guided by imperfect and varied systems of belief. I don't know that we've escaped the religious or sacred model of how to make sense of the world, says Rousseau. The irony is that you have it being espoused by people who are anti-religious. Though their definitions will change, we will always hold on to warring ideas of good and evil, and those ideas will always have a distinctly spiritual bent, regardless of where people fall on the spectrum of religiosity, because they deal with questions of why we're all here and what life is, well, for. I believe there's good and evil, Juarez tells me when I ask whether in her video about the satanic symbolism of Astroworld she was speaking literally or figuratively. If someone is hurting and as a human being you don't take action, that means you lack empathy, and that doesn't come from a good place. That, to me, is demonic. That makes sense, I tell her, and on a level I don't quite understand, but nonetheless feel it does. Our next article this week on religion in the news comes from NPR, and this article was first published / recorded, it is NPR after all, on December 9th. This article is entitled, 1 in 10 Americans Say the COVID-19 Vaccine Conflicts with Their Religious Beliefs. And this article is by Deepa Shivaram of NPR. Only 10% of Americans believe that getting a COVID-19 vaccine conflicts with their religious beliefs, and 59% of Americans say too many people are using religious beliefs as an excuse not to get vaccinated, a new survey from the Public Religion Research Institute and the Interfaith Youth Corps shows. A majority of Americans, 60%, also say there is no valid religious reason to refuse a COVID-19 vaccine, but the number changes when it comes to white evangelicals. While a majority of every other major religious group says their faith doesn't include a valid reason to refuse the vaccine, just 41% of white evangelicals believe the same. The findings in the survey, the largest one to track the intersection of the pandemic and religious beliefs, could be crucial to understanding how to encourage more people in the U.S. to be vaccinated, especially as vaccines become more available to children. PRRI CEO and founder Robert Jones says in a statement that the results show that many Americans believe religious liberty is not an absolute, and that there should be a balance when it comes to the health of communities. Whether religious exemptions from the COVID-19 vaccine should be allowed resulted in a more divided array of answers. Just 39% of Americans support a blanket religious exemption excuse, meaning that anyone who says the vaccine is against their faith doesn't have to get it. But 51% of Americans are in favor of granting a religious exemption if the person has documentation from a faith leader saying that the vaccine goes against their religious beliefs. Interestingly, if the question was posed in the context of the government mandating vaccinations, 58% of Americans say people should be allowed to have religious exemptions from the vaccines. The survey also shows that it is quite effective when religious leaders speak up about vaccines. More than 50% of those who said they attend religious services regularly also said that the faith-based approach encouraged them to get vaccinated. When pastors encourage vaccination and mosques hold vaccine clinics, more people get vaccinated. Faith-based groups remain ready to play our role, but we need partners, IFYC president and founder Ibu Patel said. So many people in diverse religious communities believe that our bodies were created by God, and we need to cherish and protect those, and that we have an obligation to the common good, Patel told Megan Miskovsky of Arizona Public Media. A faith-based approach could also be an effective way to get more children vaccinated. There is some evidence that faith-based approaches could encourage parents to get their children vaccinated. Just 16% of parents overall who are vaccine hesitant or who refuse to get their kids vaccinated say they would be influenced by a faith-based approach, and that number jumps up to 29% for parents who are Christians of color. We've got time for one more brief article this week, and it comes from Religion News Service, published on December 13th. Faith-based disaster relief teams fan out across six states to help tornado recovery. The subheadline, the tornadoes hit mostly southern states where Southern Baptist disaster relief teams, as well as Samaritan's Purse, are well-trained to respond. This article is by Yonat Shimron of Religion News Service. Faith-based disaster relief teams are already working in several of the areas hardest hit by devastating tornadoes that tore through six states Friday, December 10th. On Monday, 74 people were confirmed dead across eight counties in Kentucky, and another 13 died in Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, and Illinois. Dozens more are accounted for. President Biden was expected to travel to Kentucky on Wednesday to survey the damage. The tornadoes hit mostly southern states where Southern Baptist disaster relief teams are well trained to respond. Sam Porter, National Director for Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, said teams have begun working in seven locations, with headquarters in Truman, Arkansas. Some of the teams will be setting up mobile kitchens to provide hot meals to people whose homes were destroyed or whose power was out. But all the teams will be expected to work on clearing trees and debris away from homes. These volunteers are experts with chainsaws and can also bring in heavy construction equipment. They have years of experience assisting in all kinds of natural disasters, including ice storms, hurricanes, and floods. "We're trying to spread out as far and as wide as we can," Porter said. Samaritan's Purse, the humanitarian relief organization based in Boone, North Carolina, is setting up three bases in Arkansas and Kentucky with teams that will clear debris, lay tarps on salvageable homes, and search through debris, said Caitlin Lam, a spokesperson. Lam said there was already a team in Mayfield, Kentucky, where dozens died at a candle factory. In addition, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association has sent chaplains alongside the disaster response teams to provide emotional and spiritual support to families who have lost homes and family members. Both Samaritan's Purse and the BGEA are headed by evangelist Franklin Graham. Many other faith-based groups are responding, including Jewish Chabad Lubavitch emissaries who brought winter clothing, blankets, food, and bottled water to hard-hit areas in western Kentucky. Many of the disaster relief teams are using churches in their parking lots as their bases. Churches have not escaped the devastation. Some were destroyed and others badly damaged. The Salvation Army, the United Way, Global Empowerment Mission, and CARE are all working in the field, as well as raising money for people devastated by the tornadoes. Porter said he expected teams of volunteers to be on the ground for weeks to come, including on Christmas Day. He added that much of the work may involve sorting through debris with homeowners and helping them decide what to keep and pack and what to toss. "When you've gone through a traumatic event like that, it really trips you up," said Porter. "When we go in, we're the hands and feet of the Lord. They just can't do it themselves." Well, that's going to do it for this week on Religion in the News. We appreciate you tuning in and hope you enjoyed the program. I'm Brian LeBlanc for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. We'll talk to you next time. Hope you enjoyed the program today. This has been Religion in the News from the North Carolina Reading Service.